Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Eric Berger. His new book, very important to understand, Liftoff, is the Elon Musk and the desperate early days that launched SpaceX. It is March 2006. We are on Omaluk Island, part of the Marshall Atolls, the Kwajalein Atolls, part of the Marshall Chain string in the Pacific. We are standing there waiting for a rocket called Falcon 1 to launch. Why we're there and who is there to watch this are the critical ways to understand SpaceX's success. Eric, congratulations and a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. March 2006. What am I looking at, that rocket raised out there called Falcon 1? What is riding on this launch and who is watching it? Good evening to you.
Good evening. This is the very first test launch of a SpaceX rocket. The company has put 4 years. They've gone as fast as they can, and they've reached this island in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific Ocean to try to reach orbit on their very first attempt. And so it's a skinny black and white rocket, several stories tall, with a single main engine and an upper stage, and they're about to ignite that engine.
They're about to ignite an engine called Merlin. And what I learned from you, Eric, is that space exploration comes down to an engine. That's it. Everything else you can add on, but you must build the engine. And that engine right now is to be tested in flight for the first time, watching both at Omaluk and back at Kwajalein, the army base that is extends through all these atolls. And then back in California are the gathering of heroes, the band of brothers and sisters who are SpaceX. This is a private enterprise. So why have they come 5,000 miles from California to launch a rocket? Why didn't they do this back in California, Eric?
Right. So all the key people are, in fact, on Kwajalein, several miles away from Omaluk, watching. Elon Musk is there. This is before he's famous, before he's controversial as he is today. And the key people he's hired at the company. And they're in Kwajalein because they could not go fast enough in California. They had a launch site a couple hours north of their factory in Los Angeles. And the Air Force basically said, you've got to wait for these other rockets to launch, and there's more important customers, and the National Reconnaissance Office has a spy satellite to go. And so you've got to wait your turn. And Elon Musk wasn't going to wait his turn because no one was paying him to launch this rocket. Time was money. And so they made what might be seen as a rash decision to pick up their entire launch apparatus, go 4,000 miles across the Pacific Ocean. So you fly to Hawaii and then fly that distance again to get to Kwajalein, and there they are.
And they are watching for this rocket to take off because the first stage engine, Merlin, has been road tested at their facility in Texas. The second stage, Kestrel. The first stage has to work before we know whether Kestrel, the second stage, the upper stage, and does it have a satellite on it? What is it that they hope to get into orbit that day?
They have a small satellite built by the Air Force Academy. That is basically a test satellite that the students have built. DARPA, the defense agency, is paying SpaceX a few million dollars to launch this into orbit, basically to help provide them some money to get off the ground. And so there's the Air Force captain is there. It's in March, and they're going to see if it goes to orbit.
Some of the personalities watching this launch, who is Hans Königsmann? What is his job that day?
Hans Königsmann is a German who found himself in America about a decade earlier. And his job is to make sure the avionics, so the flight software, the flight computers on board, all the wiring and stuff, to make sure that's all done right. Because once you light a rocket's engine, you you don't have any more control over it. The computer on board takes over.
And Jeremy Holman, who is he that day?
He's the chief lieutenant to Tom Mueller. Tom Mueller is basically Elon's right-hand man. He's in charge of propulsion. So Mueller built the engine, and Jerry Holman was basically his key lieutenant. He did led a lot of the testing, did a lot of the work on the engine. And so he has probably had his hands on this rocket the most out of anyone there.
And Tim Buzza, what's his job that day?
Tim Buzz is the launch director. So he's seated in the small control center on Kwajalein Atoll, you know, right next to Elon and sort of helping to lead the countdown.
Ann Chenery, U.S. Air Force veteran.
Ann Chenery was the she was the launch conductor. So she was actually sending commands to and from the rocket. She had a background in the Air Force. And, you know, when she was in her 30s, decided she wanted actually a little more excitement than that. And so she went to her startup rocket company.
And they're watching this liftoff, having checked it, they load the locks. It's a kerosene and liquid oxygen liftoff. And they need to actually see it fly. It's not good enough for the test to work at McGregor. It's not good enough for it to work in a computer. It starts lifting off. I have seconds. They notice on what they're watching it on a video screen. Is that correct, Eric?
So yes.
They see everything as the rocket takes off. They notice that there's something that rocketry calls an anomaly. There's a flash or a piece of smoke or some flame coming out. What are they seeing? Chris Thompson, I think, sees it first.
Yeah, so they obviously you want the engine to ignite. That's actually a pretty big challenge, getting a rocket engine to ignite right when you want it to. And so you want to see some fire, but they also saw fire on the side of the engine. That was not good. They could see right away that the engine was on fire. And the hope was, what Musk told me later, was they hoped that maybe if the rocket climbed high enough, there wouldn't be enough ambient oxygen in the atmosphere and that fire would go out on the engine.
However, they didn't make it. So the engine burns and the rocket goes out of control. And does it come apart in the sky? I don't think it reaches escape velocity, and it rains down. Where does it fall?
It goes up for about 30 seconds, and then it basically comes right back down on the atoll on Omelek Island. And so it makes a big splash. The bulk of the rocket comes down in one piece, and then it's sort of debris is scattered all over the atoll and in the coral reef around the tiny island.
So
the tiny island, by the way, is the size of several New York City blocks. So it's not a big island.
Yes, it's a tropical island, such as, for example, you can imagine anyone dreaming to exist on this island. Many New Yorker cartoons over decades have shown a man with a beard standing on an island about this size. It rains down on Omelek. And everyone is crushed and disappointed that it didn't work the first time. But there's reason to expect that you'll fail the first time. Is that correct, Eric?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a private company. And so they hadn't spent hundreds of millions of dollars and had thousands of people working on this to test everything and make sure everything was right. They had gone fast with the idea that they were going to launch the rocket, get some real world test data, and then fix the problem and then build the second one and learn from that. And so the idea was that there was a chance of failure. They accepted that and they got their wish.
Right. The now well-known Elon Musk, failure is an option, is one of his proverbs. They pile into a barge that visits the island. Some people fly over and they immediately start a scavenger hunt. What are they looking for?
Well, they're collecting pieces of the rocket to try to understand what had gone wrong. It's pretty standard in aerospace as you go out and you know, there's no black box in a rocket, like in an airplane, but if you collect enough pieces, you can see what burnt badly, what's destroyed, and you can sort of pinpoint things. I mean, that's just kind of standard practice and you want to clean up your mess anyway, of course, because they were going to continue to use this as a launch site. They had a pretty good idea of what had gone wrong, but this was just kind of what you do when you have an accident.
It was a fuel leak. That's what went wrong. And it's something they immediately believed they could address. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a fuel leak. And what had happened is they had left the rocket out in this tropical environment. Kwajalein is pretty near the equator, and so it's humid. You get sea breeze. There's no protection from the sea breeze on this tiny island. And it eventually had corroded one of the bolts, and there was a fuel leak leading down to the countdown, and that fuel caught fire, you know, around the same time the rocket engine ignited.
Worth mentioning at this point that Elon Musk's leadership is inspirational. It also includes Elon Musk's wish to identify who did something wrong and to speak about it. And that caused tension immediately afterwards in SpaceX. So we're going to go back to the beginning of SpaceX. This launch fails. However, that is part of the program. There will be a second launch soon enough once they correct everything and go back to Omelek Island. The book is Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. Eric Berger is the author. I'm John Bash.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf, thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.